The following talk is entitled The Secret Place of the Most High and is presented by spiritual leader Rhonda Murray.
So, good morning everybody here at Vajay and hi everybody on Zoom. Yep, nice group of you. Lovely to see you all. Y'all, that's what you say in America, y'all. So I wanted to have that song based on the prayer for protection by James Dillett Freeman. It's much loved by those who've been in unity a long time in its original form with the God word all the way through it, as it is in that song. I was actually at Unity, at a silent Unity service when that song was first sung at Unity by Karen Taylor-Good, who wrote it and sang it. And when she wrote it, she'd come across the prayer for protection, wrote the song based on it, and then found out that she couldn't just record that without finding out who actually wrote the original prayer. And she said, oh, it's been around for ages. You know, the person who wrote it would be long dead. Well, in actual fact, James Dillett Freeman was in his 80s, sure, but very much alive, with beautiful, long, wavy silver hair, and always in a pastel-coloured suit with a pastel-coloured tie, and he was such a lovely man. And so she contacted, having found out that who had written it, she contacted Unity and got invited to sing it at a silent Unity service, and got his blessing for the song, in spite of the fact that he actually didn't like the words "all is well" that got tacked on the end, because that wasn't part of his original prayer. But these days we try not to use the God word if we can help it, because we have been around for a while in Unity know that we don't mean some superhuman being in the sky when we use that word. We know what we refer to as God, we know as omnipresent spirit, you know, everywhere present, and not in any sort of superhuman form at all. But unless we actually explain that every time we use the word God, then newer people coming in might think they're back in their childhood church, you know, where God was very much spoken of as though it was some superhuman in the sky. So we're trying to avoid the word and use omnipresence or spirit or... And because we in Unity believe that that presence, if it's everywhere present, is therefore present in us, then we also can refer to God as the spirit within us. And I like to just personalize it that little bit. Ever since I first came into Unity, I've thought of it as my inner Lord or my indwelling Lord. It's spirit expressing through me, as much as I let spirit express through me at any given time or day or circumstance. And being human, that's not always as good as it should be. Having a health challenge in recent months has really put me in touch with the basic teaching that we are threefold beings, spirit, soul, and body, and that daily word also, today's daily word that Julian read, very much, you know, was bringing out that idea that we're both human and spiritual. And we like to think of ourselves as spiritual beings, and sometimes we can suffer from a little bit of spiritual arrogance and forget that we're also human, and that if we're spirit, soul, and body, then two parts of that are very much the human part. The soul being our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and attitudes, which is what produces what happens in the outer circle of life, which is not just the body, even though we say spirit, soul, and body, it's also our outer circumstances. And when a minister is experiencing unwellness, you know, it's kind of a bit of a wake-up call, you know, it's a bit of a, gives you a bit of a shake-up to think, well, what's going on here? And to remember, you know, that we are all human, and we coming into unity and studying all the unity stuff and whatever we do in unity doesn't give us some sort of magic pill of protection against still experiencing the human conditions of life. What it does do is give us tools to deal with situations that come up. And yesterday I sat in on Rachel's Bible class. By the way, I know that sounds boring, but believe you me, the unity teachings on, you know, the history and background of the Bible and the metaphysical interpretation, how to make all those stories relevant to our lives today, they're anything but boring. Right, Dennis? Very interesting class. But anyway, what I wanted to say about that, I was reminded by the questions asked how our language has moved forward, and doing so can cause confusion. For example, Bible 1 is about the history and the metaphysical meanings of the stories in what we call the Hebrew Scriptures. Now, that's what Christianity very arrogantly has always called the Old Testament, as though it's old and out of date and no longer anything to do with Christian beliefs, which is totally wrong. And because of that, we prefer to use the term Hebrew Scriptures. This is the Bible of the original Jewish people who came up with the belief in the one God. How unity is that? The one God everywhere present, you know? And so when we say Hebrew Scriptures, it's a polite way of saying Old Testament classes, okay? And sometimes we sort of move on and change our language and don't realize that we're leaving people in confusion about what we actually mean. There's some dispute about whether we should then call the New Testament the Christian Bible, because in actual fact, the Christian Bible is both parts of the Bible. Christianity is not just the four Gospels and all the letters that were written at various times by various people. Somebody's worked out that over 90% of what Jesus taught you can find in the Hebrew Scriptures. You know, they're still very relevant. And when we look at them metaphysically, they're very relevant to our lives today. Anyway, speaking of the Hebrew Scriptures, I decided to take a little bit of the Hebrew Scriptures and look at it metaphysically. So I've chosen Psalm 91 as an example of how we can read these ancient scripts as they are for their wisdom and their poetry, but we get more relevance in our lives today when we dig deeper to the metaphorical meanings, and then deeper still to the metaphysical meanings for help, guidance, and encouragement in our lives today. And that's certainly what the 91st Psalm is about. We could say that the prayer for protection was based on the 91st Psalm. It's the assurance of God's protection. It's very much a prayer of a protection. The Israelites understood this as being both personal and community. The Psalms were actually the hymns or the songs of the ancient people, and they were sung in worship services in the same way that we do today. And in the 91st Psalm, the first 10 verses are written to the people about Yahweh, written by the psalmist, who Rocco Errico actually calls the conductor, I guess, the writer, the conductor of the music. And some of it is the people's answer to the verses that are written to the people about Yahweh. Now, obviously, we're not saying these were written by God, nor are we saying they're written by David, as though in David's lifetime he wrote them all. No, they were written over a long period of time by many, many musicians in charge of the music at the Sunday service. You feel familiar, Julian? And we can tell that by the circumstances that are referred to in different psalms, that, you know, they weren't all from the one period of time. So let's get into Psalm 91, and we'll start with the first slide is the first verse of slide 91. You who live in the shelter of the Most High, who abide in the shadow of the Almighty. Now, just sometimes, very occasionally, I prefer the King James translation to the later and much more accurate New Revised Standard Version that I use for everything. But in the King James Version, it's you who live in the secret place of the Most High, who abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And so I think that slide that Julian had up before was about the secret place. And where do we find that secret place? Well, with our unity teachings, we find that secret place within ourselves, within our own thoughts and feelings, within our own heart and mind. And just let's pick up on that word Almighty. You know, in the original scripts for the Hebrew scriptures, there's different names for God. In fact, different writers at different times use different names for God. But this particular name is El Shaddai. And you know what that actually means? The breasted one. Does that suggest that might have been a female version of spirit? Because, of course, spirit is male and female. The human side of us are all is male and female, and even our spiritual nature is male and female. So El Shaddai means mountains or breasts, or the breasted one. You get the picture of same shape, fertility, prosperity. So you who abide in the shadow of prosperity, if you like, or even that term breasted one, you know, has a nurturing aspect to it, doesn't it? So where do we find the secret place of the Most High? Within our own consciousness, within our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, holding positive thoughts and beliefs leads us to be courageous in our actions. As I quoted from May Rowland in Thursday night's email, actions follow beliefs. In that same book, which was, what did I quote from? I didn't write it here. that she goes on to say, if your present belief in God is not bringing you health, happiness, and peace of mind, perhaps you have not grasped the true concept of God as the working power in your life. Don't you love that? So let's have a look at the next slide. This is the second verse, and it's carrying on from that first verse of, you know, you who live in the Most High and the shadow of the Almighty will say to the Lord. Now, the word used for God here is Lord. The original word was Adonai, which was in the normal beliefs and speech, that was Yahweh. Yahweh. It could only be written as four consonants. It was so sacred it couldn't be written with the vowels, but it was spoken as Yahweh. Now, just a little side note here. If you've ever wondered where the word Jehovah comes from and how that comes to be associated with God, that was the German biblical scholars in the 1400s or something around there who took those four consonants and put German vowels in to make it pronounceable, and they came up with Jehovah. And I personally don't relate to that term at all. I would much rather go back to the original and say Yahweh. We say Christ within, or as I said, in the Lord. My refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Now, this was a bit challenging for me succumbing to illness recently. I have to ask myself, do I trust in my inner Lord to keep me healthy? Or is that spiritual arrogance? I remind myself that spirit is the working power in my life, and my part is to let that spirit work for divine order. Now, you can take the slides off because the next one's a little bit further along, Julian, if you like. I love the symbology of this next part. For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler. The fowler is the bird catcher. Okay. And from the deadly pestilence. So what's the deadly pestilence? Plague, disease, COVID? All negative things like pests and sickness symbolize negative thoughts, things out of divine order. Changing our thoughts is key. He will cover you with his pinions, that's wings. So we've got this image of a mother hen bringing her chickens under her wings. I love chooks, I don't know about you, but I love that image of being gathered up under the wings. And under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. A buckler is a shield that's tied onto the arm. This is such a lovely picture of God's protection, like a mother hen sheltering us under her wings, or a protector like a bodyguard that we can always call on. You will not fear the terror of the night. Metaphysically, when something is referring to the night, that's the subconscious. Or the arrow that flies by day, that's the conscious. Or the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or the destruction that wastes at noonday. So can we admit to some fears about the stuff we don't see coming, like it came in the night? Having some fears about the stuff we do see because it's there in plain daylight. The thinking brain is based on logic, facts, and knowledge. The feeling brain decides what's good, bad, desirable, undesirable, what we deserve or don't deserve. We know what to do, whether or not we do it, depends on how it makes us feel. In Bible times, there was no distinction between thinking and feeling. When the Bible says mind, it means thinking and feeling. And likewise, Charles Fillmore, one of the founders of Unity. We need to do more than visualize what we want, more than visualize feeling good when the goal is realized, although they are important. It's about feeling good in the now, even without achieving that goal, and celebrating the possibilities of the future. I choose not to refer to my illness if I have to, or if I have to, I always refer to it in the past tense as something that's over, finished, gone. When we trust the one power, one presence with us and within us, we feel content, safe, and secure. We can release any feelings of helplessness and hopelessness and trust that all is well today and will be tomorrow. So our next slide is for verses 7 and 8. A thousand may fall at your side. A thousand what? Thoughts and feelings, of course. Negative thoughts and feelings. A thousand may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you, that is, your real self, your Christ self. You will only look with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked, that is, the results of negative thoughts and beliefs. There's a lovely old saying in Unity, nothing can disturb the calm peace of my soul. Nothing can disturb the calm peace of my soul. Because you have made the Lord your refuge, the Most High your dwelling place, in other words, by turning within, no evil shall befall you. So what's evil? Evil is anything less than divine ideas of good. No scourge come near your tent. What's a scourge? It's a whip. So in other words, don't whip yourself for punishment. The tent is a house, the house of consciousness. So let's keep our house of consciousness safe and comfortable and happy and not go whipping ourselves with having negative thoughts or not getting the results we want. Slide 4 is about verses 11 and 12, and it's about angels. Now, when we come across angels in the Bible, they invariably refer to God's messengers. And so what we're talking about here is guidance, divine guidance. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone. Does that make you feel safe and protected? Isn't that a lovely, lovely picture? And one of my favorite quotes from Proverbs is, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In other words, turn within for guidance. Don't believe what you read in the paper or hear on the TV. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding of that outer stuff. And verse 13 is about courage. If we can get that feeling of safety and protection, that gives us the courage to do what we choose to do. You will tread on the lion and the adder, the young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. So this refers again to negative beliefs. And so the lion and the adder in the adult form, that's those thoughts and beliefs we've been holding for a while and they've matured. They're in their adulthood. They're in their strongest. And we need to tread on them. We need to let them go, kill them out. But guess what happens? New ones come, the young lion and the young serpent you will trample underfoot. So get rid of the old beliefs, but just watch out for any new ones sneaking in that also need to be dealt with. So our next slide is verse 14, and it's the reassurance of omnipresence. I am here. And the changes to the first person. So the writer is now writing as though it's spirit speaking. Those who love me I will deliver. I will protect those who know my name. Now, name metaphysically is the nature of something. And the nature of God is all good. So when we know that that one presence, one power is all good, when they call to me, I will answer them. How about that for divine guidance? I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue them and honor them. This always reminds me of that passage about the prophet Samuel when he was training under the priest Eli and heard a voice in the night calling his name, and he kept thinking it was the priest. But Eli the priest told him that he wasn't calling him, that next time he heard that his name being called to say, "Speak, Lord, for I am listening." You know, it's so easy to say, "Listen, Lord, because I'm speaking." No, it's "Speak, Lord, for I am listening." And verse 16 is the final verse. "With long life I will satisfy them and show them my salvation." Now, salvation is an interesting word. It's been used in some, you know, pretty negative ways. When we go back to the root of it and find out what it really means, it's saving. It's saving of something. So in this case, it's saving us from useless, unnecessary hardships. Saving only the good. "With long life I will satisfy them and show them my salvation." Now, those last couple of verses are much more powerful when we put them in the first person, so that it's like our inner Lord speaking to us and us speaking back to our inner Lord. "When you call to me, I will answer you. I will be with you in trouble. I will rescue you and honor you. With long life, I will satisfy you and show you my salvation." It's kind of summed up by a paragraph right at the end of Dr. Cady's book, Lessons in Truth, which, by the way, was the first book that the Fillmores ever allowed to be published, because they saved the right to grow and learn and they didn't want things put into writing. But when Dr. Cady lectured at Unity Church it was in those days, they were so impressed with her beliefs that they got her to do a series of 12 classes. And then that got published as the first Unity book, Lessons in Truth. That was published in, not 19, 1894. And it's just as relevant today. It's still worth reading. We've probably got about 10 copies in our library, haven't we, Jackie, if anyone wants to borrow it. I'll just give you a warning, though. Some editor, 30 years later, made the last chapter, the first chapter. So you'll find it's much easier if you start at chapter 2 and then come back and read the first chapter at the end, okay? Totally messed the book up. Left out of chapter 2, by the way. Okay. So did you all hear that? Truthunity.com. I usually get that right. Truthunity.net have the original version online, so you can download it there, or you can just download the missing chapter, the name of which will come to me in about 30 seconds. Anyway, at the end of the book, on the last page, she sums up this whole subject with this little quote: "The whole business of your Lord the Father in you, is to care for you, to love you with an everlasting love, to note your slightest cry, and to rescue you. Isn't that beautiful? I'm going to read it again. The whole business of your Lord, in brackets, the Father in you, is to care for you, to love you with an everlasting love, to note your slightest cry, and to rescue you. I just love that verse. And to lead into our meditation, I invite you to listen again to the words of the psalm, and as is only appropriate because it's what it originally was, set to music and sung by, and I didn't get the name, I hope the name of the singer is. Okay, at any rate, give yourself permission to relax physically and just let these words wash over you.
I'd like to sing Psalm 91 as a prayer over you, your family, and your nation.
Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my fortress, my God, in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you are safe. Destroys at midday, for He will command His angels concerning you to guard you in all of your ways. Because you love me, says the Lord, I will rescue. Show you my
there's nothing you have to fear. There is nothing to fear.
I invite you to let the words of another poem by James Philip Freeman wash over you, so like the words of that psalm. I Am There by James Philip Freeman. Do you need me? I am there. You cannot see me. Yet I am the light you see by. You cannot hear me, yet I speak through your voice. You cannot feel me, yet I am the power at work in your hands. I am at work though you do not understand my ways. I am at work though you do not recognize my works. I am not strange visions. I am not mysteries. Only in absolute stillness beyond self can you know me as I am. And then but as a feeling and a faith. Yet I am there. Yet I hear. Yet I answer. When you need me, I am there. Even if you deny me, I am there. Even when you feel most alone, I am there. Even in your fears, I am there. Even in your pain, I am there. I am there when you pray and when you do not pray. I am in you and you are in me. Only in your mind can you feel separate from me, or only in your mind are the myths of yours and mine. Yet only with your mind can you know me and experience me. Empty your heart of empty fears. When you get yourself out of the way, I am there. You can of yourself do nothing, but I can do all. I am in all. Though you may not see the good, good is there, for I am there. I am there because I have to be, because I am. Only in me does the world have meaning. Only out of me does the world take form. Only because of me does the world go forward. I am the law on which the movement of the stars and the growth of living cells are founded. I am the love that is the law's fulfilling. I am assurance. I am peace. I am oneness. I am the law that you can live by. I am the love that you can cling to. I am your assurance. I am your peace. I am with you. I am. Though you fail to find me, I do not fail you. Though your faith in me is unsure, my faith in you never wavers. Because I know you, because I love you. Beloved, I am there. Let's sit in the silence with those thoughts for a couple of minutes. Loving Spirit, we give thanks for this awareness of your presence within and around us. I choose to live in that awareness that you are with me in every situation, drawing forth the good. And for this I say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Amen.